Caribbean and the Americas. More information about Jose Antonio Zayas Caban and Trace with Miguel Zanon is available at thecedar.org.
This is Sound Effects, a radio playground, a compendium of radio theater, comedy, and the audio arts, with your host, Jerry Stearns.
Didn't you wake me, you sycophantic little worm?
Yes, sir. We're nearly there.
Nearly where? Where the hell am I?
We're at the northern edge of your district, Senator. Remember the stop you insisted on making, even though there's maybe 50 votes in the whole county and a lot more important places for you to be?
Like where?
Like St. Paul. There's going to be a vote tonight.
Pah! More to life than floor votes, Edgar. You ever been this far north before?
No, sir.
Beautiful country. Salt of the earth, people, nature's bounty all around you. Speaking of, did you arrange for the food to be delivered to the speak?
Hot dogs and buns, yes, sir.
Not too expensive a sausage, I hope. After I put enough beer in them, these locals will eat an old shoe and I'd still get their vote.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and, the other thing.
Your lady friend has been alerted to your presence in town,
sir. Excellent. You're gonna love this speakeasy, Edgar. Run by the prettiest lady you ever saw. Last time I saw little Susan Conti, she was still in pigtails. I wonder if she still has any of her old man's money.
One can only hope, sir.
Coming into the station. Oh, you're gonna love this, Edgar. This is a town you'll never forget.
Stand by for adventure. Stand by for mystery. Stand by for the Icebox Radio Theater and Rum Runner Sue. It's Rum Runner Sue, starring Billy Joe Cones. Mystery and adventure in the northern wilderness of Prohibition America. We'll be back with tonight's exciting story right after this.
And this that he mentioned is me. I'm Jerry Stearns, the host of Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, bringing you modern audio theater each Sunday night here on Fresh Air Radio. And a little later on, well, after the top of the hour anyway, we'll bring you something from the nice folks at Uncanny County, something that is more or less seasonal, and a short piece from the Fire Sign Theater. But we're starting it off with, as you just heard there, something from the Icebox Radio Theater in International Falls. It's the latest, in fact, of the Rum Runner Sue series. Just came out in November of this year. Rum Runner Sue runs a restaurant up on the border of Minnesota and Canada during Prohibition in the late 1920s. It's a mystery, a drama. Well, they'll tell you all about it. This is Rum Runner Sue in a story they call Blood, Beer, and Ballots, here on Sound Effects.
The year, 1927. The place, Icebox, Minnesota. A tiny village on Rainy Lake, the island spotted paradise that forms the border between the United States and Canada. Between the great social experiment of Prohibition and the legal production and distribution of Lady Liquor. Just off Main Street sits a tiny establishment called the Deacon Seat. home and throne room to the queen of these parts, the owner-operator, a beauty in checked flannel and dungarees, Susan Conti. Or, as she's known in these parts, Rum Runner Sue.
A misnomer, that. I don't run rum as much as stay still and let it come to me. And if you're wondering if the not-so-occasional violation of our nation's most controversial constitutional amendment is the extent of my lawbreaking, I'm happy to report it is. With the exception of selling liquor, I am a law-abiding citizen. I believe in life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and the government's right to govern the people so that one man's happiness doesn't become another man's misery. In short, I believe in this country, and this country's belief that our leaders should be chosen from among the people. Which leads us to the evening when Senator Hiram Rostam, state senator, that is, bought round after round of drinks at the Deacon seat, much to the delight of all the gathered registered voters. Psst. Bo, you still out there?
Of course.
You sure you don't want to come in? It's a little creepy having a strange man lurking outside my kitchen door.
I'm not strange. That is, I'm not unfamiliar. And I don't think it's a good idea to set foot in the club right now.
You afraid Senator Huzitz will cause a fuss?
Too many twists and turns on this road. I'd just as soon stay out here except in the event of a fight.
At this rate, that might be coming up any minute.
Hang on. Do you hear that?
I don't hear anything.
Exactly. I'd better go in there.
Hold up. Let me look through the door first. Oh, dear.
What is it?
There's a girl. She's crying. I think she's one of Madame Rose's.
I didn't know the senator ordered up that kind of entertainment.
I don't think he did. The senator is as red as a beet, and all the boys are looking shamefaced. Wait, we're all right.
How?
Mary intervened. She's a regular mama bear to Madame Rose's girls.
Don't you worry about a thing, Tilly. We'll get it sorted out.
But I don't understand. He said he was coming to see me.
Everything okay, Mary?
Tilly here came down from Madame Rose's to see the senator. Apparently, they had a date tonight.
He called me yesterday. He said he was extending the campaign all the way up to the border just to see me. When he said something about the Deacon seat, I figured on meeting him here. I thought we were going to have dinner.
Oh, dear. I'll get her a cup of tea.
Thank you.
Crisis averted?
For now. And for God's sake, Beau, would you come into the kitchen? You look like a hobo waiting on a ham sandwich.
Do you have a ham sandwich?
What?
All right. Maybe I'll just vamoose. Sounds like things are going to be pretty reasonable in there.
All except a broken heart.
No law against that, unfortunately. I'll check back here in an hour or so, make sure everything stays quiet. Or maybe I'll just go in.
Hurry, they're tearing my bar apart.
Unhand me this instant. Cheat, liar, bad man.
Get away, you ruffian.
All right, that's enough.
Who the hell are you?
Sheriff John Beauregard, Senator.
Excellent work, Sheriff. This man accosted me. And you're on the scene immediately. Very commendable.
Uh-huh. Hello, Pete.
Sheriff, this man a very, very bad man. He cheated me out of $1,000. He go to jail, yes?
Hold on there. Somebody want to tell me what happened here?
Well, we're having a very pleasant evening with some of my good friends here in town.
Over beer and brats, I see?
I really don't know. I assume those were non-alcoholic beverages. Law of the land, of course.
Oh, brother.
Uh-huh. So then what happened?
This foreigner burst in and laid hands on the senator.
And you are?
Edgar Comstock, the senator's campaign manager. And I want to know what you're going to do about this assault, officer.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering that myself. Pete, why don't you tell me your side?
What for? It was simple assault. All these men are witnesses.
There's two sides to every story. I can get them here, or I can get them down at my office, where I might find it necessary to book everyone involved, at which point this whole thing becomes a matter of public record.
Well, that is,
Oh, be still, Edgar. Let the Finn have his say.
Go ahead, Pete.
This Rasta man, he tell me he can help buy farm near Emo, Canada. He take $1,000 from me, down payment on the land. Now no farm, no nothing. Border guards won't even let me through.
Well, Senator Rostam?
I've never seen this man before in my life. though his story does move me, of course. I'm afraid it's not within my power to broker land deals in a foreign nation. Perhaps he's mistaken. These foreigners don't understand our new world democracy.
What is this nonsense? I give you $1,000 last spring.
Okay, Pete, that's enough. Go cool off.
Sheriff, you
come down to my office tomorrow. We'll see what we can do.
You're a bad man, Rostam. You pay for this thing you've done.
Yeah. Excellent work, Sheriff. You kept the peace without firing a single shot.
But is it really wise to leave that criminal at large?
I know, Pete. He was a little hot at times, but he'll cool off. Now, what is all this about $1,000?
No idea. Poor fellow must have had me confused with someone else. Now, if you excuse me, Sheriff, we have another stop to make.
No, you don't.
I beg your pardon?
I have it on good authority you are headed to Madame Rose's next. Pete needs time to cool down, which means you need to be safe and sound at your hotel and not wandering the back roads.
How dare you
insinuate? Or I could just take you down to get a statement. I know the local newspaper editor. I'm sure he'd want to come down and photograph our illustrious guest.
Let's go to the hotel.
Oh, just as well. Now, where did that little filly get to?
Oh, aren't you in enough trouble? Come on.
Wait a minute. You haven't paid the tab.
Send an invoice to the senator's office.
Oh! Why, of all the no good chiseling, I hope you're not going to let him get away with that.
Nope. Don't intend to. In fact, I think I should discreetly follow them right now to make sure they get to the hotel and don't slip town. You got any coffee on?
Of course.
Pour a thermos for me, would you? I'm going to need to camp out in front of the hotel tonight.
What is it, Bo?
Didn't you hear? Rostam claimed he'd never seen Pete before.
So?
So how did he know he was Finnish?
Sue, hey. Open up, Sue. Come on.
I'm coming. What?
I'm sorry.
That better not be the reason you knocked on my door at... What time is it?
I'm really sorry, Sue, but I need your help.
3 a.m?
I wouldn't have done this if it wasn't absolutely necessary.
Mary took that little girl back to Rose's, which meant I had to tend bar by myself and do all the cleanup.
I'm serious, though. I need your help.
Well, it had better be a matter of life and death.
Well, funny you should say that.
What is it?
It's the senator. He's dead.
Oh, Bo. This means a rough week for you, I guess.
And that's why I'm here.
What's why you're here?
He was found dead in his hotel room, in the bath, to be exact. The door was locked. The only window would be tough for a cat to fit through. And he looks to have been strangled.
Okay. What do you need me for?
I'm stumped, Sue. That campaign manager's raising holy hell, and the hotel is talking about moving the body to avoid bad press, and the crime scene is getting all trampled. If I could get at least an idea of what happened before the state police arrive, it would be a big help.
I see that, but again, what do you need me for?
Can you come down and look things over? Again, I'm absolutely stumped.
Why, John Beauregard, are you inviting me to a hotel at this hour?
Yes.
Oh, don't do the puppy dog eyes. You take all the fun out of teasing you.
Yes.
Okay. I'll get my coat.
Anyone come through here, Johnson?
No, sir, Sheriff. I kept him away, just like you ordered.
Okay. Guard the hallway door. We're gonna look around the crime scene.
Yes, sir.
You ready for this?
Seeing as I'm not awake yet, sure.
Okay, just brace yourself.
Dear God.
I know.
Any idea when it happened?
Campaign manager found him about 1:30. He says he'd been dispatched to get more booze. It was gone about 15 minutes. When he came back, no senator. But the bathroom door was closed and locked, light spilling from underneath. When his knocking didn't raise an answer, he got a beefy bellhop to force the door for him. And that's when they found this.
Kind of an odd smell.
Yeah, I think that's his aftershave mixed with who knows what.
Uh-huh. You mind if I get a closer look?
Be my guest.
Oops.
What is it?
Door key. It was on the floor.
Oh, yeah. That was there when I arrived. It was in the keyhole on the bathroom side. We figured it fell out when they forced the door.
So I've messed up a crime scene?
Yeah, I guess so. Just put it back in the floor about the spot where it was.
Okay. There. All right, I don't know what to do.
Just look, please. I can't figure it. A man was strangled to death behind a locked door.
Not much sign of a struggle, either. You sure he didn't fall and hit his head on the tub?
Well, I don't see any evidence of that. A man his size would have done a lot of damage taking a fall like that.
To his head or the tub?
Well, both. There'd be blood and possibly broken porcelain, and I don't see either. No, the cause of death was strangulation. Look at those finger marks.
Now, I told you once...
Oh, now what?
Hold on a second.
You don't have any right to keep me out of there.
Now, just calm down.
It's all right, Johnson. This guy's the senator's campaign manager.
And chief of staff.
Right. Let him in.
Yes, sir.
I want to know what you're going to do about this, Sheriff. You've called the FBI, of course.
It's on my to-do list.
Oh, don't get smart with me. I would hope you at least apprehended that ruffian who accosted the senator at the bar.
You mean Pete? Yeah, I have a deputy headed to his house, but I don't think he did it.
Don't be ridiculous. Of course he did it. The senator was a virile man, perfectly capable of taking care of himself. It would have taken a gorilla like that man from the bar to overcome him. And another thing. Good God, that saloon keeper's in there.
Sue? Yeah, she is.
What on earth for? This is a crime scene.
She's, consulting with the sheriff's office.
But maybe I should just go.
You stay. I need you to hear this. Now you, what makes you think Pete killed the senator?
Well, who else could?
Any strong man, you got the jump on him. Even if the senator is virile, he still looks to be in his 50s.
That's slander.
If you say so, but I still want to know why you think it was Pete. And don't say he was strong enough. We're talking about motive now. Why do you think Pete did it?
You saw him at the saloon, didn't you? The man was out of his head with anger.
About a land deal, yes.
About something. I didn't bother to listen to his ramblings.
Well, I did. Pete said the senator took $1,000 from him for some land in Canada, then gave him the brush off.
You see, ridiculous. The senator's never owned property in Canada.
Then why did Pete think he did?
Well, I haven't the faintest idea.
But the two men were acquainted, I take it.
You take it wrong. How could an important man like the senator know a backwoods hick like that?
Well, he must have visited our fair community more than once. Remember the girl Tilly? She might have been wrong about the senator being a suitor, but she definitely knew him. My guess is that Rostam has been up here visiting Tilly plenty of times. Pete's a single guy. Probably visits Madame Rose now and again. They ran into each other, struck up a conversation, and that led to the swindle.
How dare you?
Keep your shirt on. She makes a lot of sense. $1,000 is tough to come by for a man like Pete, but he might trust it to an important figure like a senator.
Hearsay. And again, I say slander. That big ape got angry at Senator Rostam, burst in here, and strangled him to death.
Would have made quite a fuss in the hotel, even if it's the middle of the night. Sue?
Hmm?
While we're waiting on the deputy to bring in Pete, why don't you ask some of your friends on the staff here what they saw?
So I really am a consultant?
I guess so. Sure.
Good. I'll send you an invoice.
What? Come.
Here you go, Sheriff.
You give you any trouble?
No, sir, unless you count all the crying. Sheriff, I hear the big man's dead.
Look for yourself. He's right in there.
Oh, no. I don't look. I nothing to do with this, Sheriff. On my mother, I swear.
Here, Pete. Let's have those handcuffs off, okay?
Are you mad?
I'll vouch for him.
I want to see this man hang, damn it.
What?
Relax, Pete. That's not going to happen.
Can you promise me, Miss Susie?
Well, there'll be a trial anyway. Huh. Now have a seat.
Why exactly is she running the interrogation?
Quiet.
Now, Pete, you know why you're here, right?
I lose my temper a little.
That's right. And they told you what happened to the senator, right?
But I had nothing to do with that. I don't...
Okay, I know. But you know what happened to him, right? You know how serious this is.
Yes, I know how serious.
Okay. Now start by telling me about this land in Emo. How did you and Senator Rostam meet?
Well, I don't like to say.
I'm afraid you have to.
Can you look away as I do? I don't like to say such things looking at a lady.
All right. There, I'm facing the wall.
I was visiting Miss Rose.
Uh-huh.
I go there sometimes when, well,
I understand. I take it Rostam visited Miss Rose sometimes.
Now, you see here.
That's enough. Go ahead, Pete.
Yes. The big man, Senator. He's not there often, but I see him before, once or twice. He always very friendly to everyone, buying drinks and such. Very popular when he is there.
All right. Now, what about the farm?
Oh, it's a lovely spot. The owner is a nice man. He'd sell to me, but it is a different country. There is, red tape. The owner asked for $1,000 to hold the land.
Like a down payment?
Yes, yes, he call it that, too. The senator man, he say he worked the government and he could help me. Give him the $1,000.
Uh-huh. So you gave it to him?
Oh, yes. He is important, like the president.
Well, like the president, sure. Then what happened?
Nothing. I wait months and months, and I hear nothing. Then I hear big man coming to your place for big party, and I want to talk to him about my $1,000, but he lie. He say he never see me before.
All right, calm down. Now, after you left the deacon seat, where did you go?
Home, straight.
You didn't take a walk to calm down or anything?
Well, my place over a mile from yours, that's plenty of walking. I felt very bad when I got home about how I'd acted. But that doesn't change what he did. He lie.
How much longer are we going to listen to this nonsense?
Just one question more. Pete?
Yes, Sheriff?
Look me in the eye, Pete. Did you kill Senator Rostam?
Oh. No. I do nothing. I do nothing.
All right. That's enough. Johnson, take him out.
You're letting him go?
Of course not. Hotel opened up a spare room for us across the hall. He'll camp there.
I am innocent, Sheriff. I swear it.
Go on with Deputy Johnson, Pete. We'll get this sorted out.
Yes.
Well, what do you think?
I think that man should hang immediately.
I'm not talking to you.
Well, he seemed pretty broken up. I'm not sure he could keep a secret if he tried. It should be a simple matter to clear him.
What are you talking about? He's more than capable of strangling Senator Rostam.
Yes, but he'd have to walk through a hotel lobby and up a flight of stairs to do it. If he did, it's a sure bet the night manager or someone saw him. I've talked to them already and they saw nothing. Heard plenty, though.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Night desk said they heard you and the senator arguing. You want to tell me what that was about?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You got pretty loud, they said. And it didn't sound friendly.
Well, the staff must have been mistaken. They heard someone else.
You know, if this gets to court, they'll testify they heard you arguing. You'll just have to explain yourself under oath.
Well, that is... very well. The senator is in the middle of a campaign. Time's of the essence, but he insisted on visiting this backwater despite the fact that you have maybe 100 registered voters.
Do you two fight often?
Of course not. I may have overstepped my boundaries and the senator put me back in my place. It's a necessary trait of men in leadership.
So you weren't angry at him?
Well, it's not my place to be angry. I must support the senator's decisions. Now explain to me why you haven't arrested that man. He's clearly the murderer.
He's in custody. We'll lock him up for 24 hours while we gather evidence.
Evidence? What evidence? What evidence would be necessary?
Fingerprints, for one. Someone had to close that bathroom door after the senator was dead. And that'd leave fingerprints on the doorknob. And then there'd be fingerprints on the body.
Which reminds me, I have to send someone back to the office for my fingerprinting kit.
Preposterous! Ridiculous! You're wasting time! Arrest him!
He's in custody now and cooperating. And quit talking about hanging. We haven't had capital punishment in this state for over a decade.
Well, more's the pity. If I were in office, that'd be the first thing to change.
Just calm down. What do you think, Sue?
Well, I think you should go get your kit while I give things a good look-see around here. Then do another pass through the staff. There might be someone I'd missed.
Check. We've already searched this room thoroughly.
What's this door?
Connecting to the next room, I think.
Nope. Coat closet.
Hold still.
What is it? Bo, what's with the gun?
Just a precaution against the feet poking out from under those coats. All right, in there. I see you. Come out with your hands up.
Tilly!
Don't shoot! I'm sorry.
How long have you been in there?
Long enough to hear everything.
Here, drink this.
Thank you. Is he still mad?
Who, that campaign manager? Oh, don't worry about him. He's just mad because his meal ticket's gone away.
Oh.
Now, Tilly, take me through it one more time. You were pretty upset when you left the deacon's seat, right?
Of course. Hiram acted like he didn't even know me.
Okay. Where'd you go then?
Well, Mary and I headed up to the shore towards Rose's. But when we got there, there was a message. Hiram had phoned to tell me to meet him here at the hotel at midnight.
So you did?
Yeah. I snuck out. Madam Rose doesn't like us to leave the house, but this was Hiram.
Okay. You got here, then what?
Well, Hiram had told me to hide in the closet until he got rid of that Edgar guy.
Okay. And what did you hear while you were in the closet?
Just talking. Then some kind of an argument.
An argument like the senator was mad at someone?
Oh no, he doesn't have much of a temper at all.
But was he mad?
Kind of reserved-like, yeah.
But you didn't hear a struggle? Things being knocked over, a fight happening, anything like that?
No, I just heard the door close.
And you stayed in the closet?
Oh yeah. Hiram made it real clear I wasn't to come out until he said so.
You didn't even peek?
No. He made it clear. And when Hiram makes something clear, you better do what he says. He's very important.
Even after you heard the sheriff and me and all the talking over the last couple of hours?
Very important.
Okay, Tilly. Deputy Johnson's going to bring Pete back in now. Can you stay with him and Deputy Johnson for a bit?
Oh, yeah. Pete's real nice. He takes a bath first and everything.
Right. All right, Deputy.
Oh, thanks, Sue. Hey, Sheriff wants you back into the crime scene.
Right.
Incompetent, ridiculous hayseed law enforcement I've ever seen.
You boys getting along?
Swimmingly.
I won't stand for it. I simply won't. That girl is clearly guilty.
What happened to Pete being clearly guilty?
What did she say? What flimsy excuse did she give for hiding in a closet even as the sheriff arrived at the scene?
She said Senator Rostam told her not to come out.
That's it?
That's it. She takes his instructions pretty literally.
Regardless, she was found hiding out at the scene of a murder. She couldn't possibly act more guilty.
You, sir, are giving me a hell of a headache. Out.
What? You can't speak to me that way.
I am in charge of this investigation, and I can't even think with you yammering on like this. Get out.
Ridiculous. Preposterous.
And find a thesaurus. I'm tired of those two words.
Pah!
Making friends, I see.
I'll be quiet. Or better yet, talk and tell me what the hell happened here.
You do remember I'm just a saloon keeper, right? An occupation that's not exactly legal?
So?
So should you really be relying on me concerning the murder of a senator?
It's not like I have much of a choice.
Gee, thanks.
Sue, I'm serious about that headache.
Okay, but there's a problem.
What's that?
As much as I glow at your expressions of faith in my abilities, I don't know what the hell happened here either.
Oh, peachy.
I don't think Pete did it, and I don't think Tilly could do it. So who done it? What hmm?
It occurs to me that we've been thinking about this in terms of suspects and motives.
Yes?
Every path we take in that direction is a dead end.
You're right. We're never going to get to the bottom of this.
Well, that's encouraging.
I mean, we'll never get to the bottom of this thinking suspects and motives. We should go back.
Please stick around for more audio theater after these kind words.
You're listening to Community Radio, Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and online around the world at KFAI.org. It's where community grows. But I bet you already knew that.
You're listening to Sound Effects, a radio playground on KFAI Fresh Air Radio.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, we'll have a seasonal work from the unusual folks at Uncanny County in just a few minutes. But first, we have the conclusion of the newest of the Rum Runner Sue series from the Icebox Radio Theater in International Falls. So let's go back to the big finish of Rum Runner Sue and Blood, Beer, and Ballots.
Yep, he's still dead.
Corpse on the floor, bruises on his neck. The door was locked, the key to same laying on the floor inside.
We assume it fell out of the keyhole when we forced the door.
Right. Skeleton key. You can lock this door from either side.
So?
So it's possible the murderer did the deed, locked the door from the outside, then slid it under the door into the bathroom.
Okay, well, that solves the locked room mystery. Now we just have to find the person strong enough to wrestle a man Rostam's size right into the grave.
I hate to say Pete.
I know, but who else is there?
There's one more thing that bothers me.
What's that?
That odd smell.
Yeah, I caught that too. Figured it was some kind of aftershave or something.
Did you find anything like that in the room?
Well, no. These two didn't even seem to pack suitcases.
Yeah, that's right. There isn't much of anything around here. A bowl with some apples, a box of crackers. That's it.
What is it?
There's something wrong about that, but I can't make out what.
Well, don't leave me hanging, Sue.
It'll come to me, I hope. Do me a favor, would you?
What's that?
Could you roll him over?
Not that I'm squeamish, but...
I just want to make sure we got this right. We're just assuming it was strangulation, right?
Pretty solid assumption, given those bruises.
Yeah, but I don't know. Call it a hunch.
Very well. M'lady wants the corpse repositioned. I'll oblige.
Shush you.
Most girls just want their fellas to rearrange the furniture. Here we go. I guess I'm lucky, but... Of course, if you'd like me to he-man a table or two, just say the word.
My hero.
Oh, yes. Ouch! Oh.
What is it?
I don't know. Something stung me. What the hell? There's a needle sticking out of his shoulder.
A what?
See for yourself.
Oh, no. The smell.
What?
Come on, Bo. We have to get you to the hospital right now. Bo, are you all right? What did the doc say?
He said you saved my life. He said it was cyanide.
Shouldn't you be laying down?
Well, I should be, but the doc gave me the cure, and we have work to do. Did you do what I asked?
Yes, I gave Johnson your orders. He should be here any moment.
How about Tilly and Pete? Did they agree to be fingerprinted?
They were scared to death, so they agreed to everything. I wish there were a better way. I think both of them are still crying.
Yeah, well, it's the only way to clear them.
And another thing, I'll make sure that every member of this crooked department is put out of work.
Sounds like he's here.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying to you? This is the end, you understand?
Thank you, Johnson. That'll be all.
Yes, sir. I'll keep close.
Thank you.
Keep close to what?
To you, because you're going to jail soon.
Of all the insulting, ridiculous... How dare you?
Would you agree to be fingerprinted, then?
What? Well, why on earth would I do that?
To clear your name. Pete and Tilly both agreed, and assuming Bo can get a good finger mark off the senator's throat, we can tell who strangled him without much trouble.
Are you suggesting that I could physically overpower a man like the senator? I don't know if you've noticed, madam, but he has many pounds of muscle on me.
Indeed. But you wouldn't need to wrestle him long, not with the poison in his system.
The poison?
We know you got into an argument because the staff heard you. Plenty loud, too. You got your hands around his neck either before or after you jabbed him with the needle. You wrestled into the bathroom and he went down, finally. The needle broke off in the scuffle, but you had the presence of mind to lock him in the bathroom and slide the key under the door. Then you went to the manager and claimed the senator was locked in the bathroom and you were concerned for him.
Well, this is ridiculous, and it proves nothing. If you arrest me, I'll sue this county out of existence.
Okay, but answer me one thing.
What is it?
When you called the sheriffs, you told them that Rostam had dispatched you to go find some booze.
Well, that's ridiculous. Alcohol is illegal.
A fact you forgot when you spoke to the sheriff. I happen to know that any of the staff here at this hotel could have gotten you a bottle of pretty much anything on a moment's notice.
And how could you possibly know that?
Because I sold it to them.
Well, fine. Maybe the senator did ask for some beverages. What does that prove?
Where is it?
What?
The booze. Where is it? All I saw in that room was some apples and crackers. If you were dispatched to get libations, you would have been there and back in 5 minutes. Not gone for 15, as you said. You were frustrated with this campaign. Who knows? Maybe you wanted to take a seat in the state house yourself.
Hearsay. This proves nothing.
No, but it's enough to arrest you and fingerprint you. Somebody put those bruises on the senator's throat. My bet's on you. Johnson?
Yes, sir?
Put him under arrest and take him down to the office and take extra care with the fingerprints.
Oh, that you, Mary?
Yep, I'm back.
How did it go? Or does the long face tell all?
Looks that way.
Oh, hello, Sheriff. Tell me you locked that fella up.
Of course. This case Sue built against him was pretty solid. He'll probably get a good lawyer, but I'm confident he'll go away.
Good.
How's Tilly?
About what you'd expect. Shattered.
Can we do anything to help?
Not really, no. I talked to Madame Rose about Tilly heading back to her folks, and she agreed. You can't do much in that line of work if you can't stop crying.
She really thought the senator was going to marry her, huh?
She'd hoped. Now she feels like she caused it all.
That's ridiculous.
I know, but she feels what she feels. But let's change the subject. I heard tell Sue that you were an official consultant on this here case.
I suppose. What's your point?
Just that you two work together. Really well. And this whole business with Tilly has got me to thinking. Life is short. We shouldn't waste a minute.
I learned that lesson back in France. But what do you mean?
Just that you two should quit chasing the chickens and get to gathering some eggs.
I don't think I've heard that one before.
Something my grandpappy used to say. And don't change the subject.
Sure. What was the subject again?
Hair up. Tie the knot, couple, for pity's sake.
Wait, are you talking about a professional partnership or the other kind?
Both. Either. Make her a deputy. Make her your wife. Just do something. And as for you, with your gosh darn dead husband and fierce independence, enough is enough. Quit playing him and drag him into the boat.
Mary.
I'm tired of hanging around watching you two almost, but not quite, do the deed. Wasn't there a play once where the man said, "The world must be peopled"?
Yeah. Much ado about nothing, I think.
Well, get to it. Or don't get to it someplace else. I'm tired of watching you two. I'm going to bed.
Tilly's made her upset.
Wow, you really are a detective, aren't you?
Hush. I have to live with her after this. Besides, she's right.
Well, she is getting smarter. How does she know from Shakespeare, by the way?
I gave her my books.
Oh.
Do you think she's right?
Do I think she's right about what?
Right about time running out on all of us. About us wasting ours.
Would I be a heel if I said I like things the way they are?
No. I feel pretty comfortable with things, too. But it did feel good to figure out this case with you.
Tell me about it. You know, you get a certain glow when you solve a mystery.
What are you saying?
Just that catching the bad guys looks good on you. Damn good.
Oh, really? You sound like you're winding up to offer me a job.
I don't have any openings except for maybe a consultant on a case-by-case basis.
Oh, case-by-case? I might need more of a commitment than that.
Meaning what?
Meaning the club is closed on Mondays and Tuesdays. On one of those days, you and I will have dinner together. Publicly.
You mean go out?
Yep.
Might be cheaper to just marry you.
Give me some time and we can talk about that. But in the meantime, if I were an official semi-pro detective and you and I were an official item about town, I think the apprentice bootlegger upstairs might just leave us alone.
Well, you're twisting my arm, so shake on it, detective.
Okay.
And as for the other thing, if I'm going to take you out to dinner every single week, I'm going to need proof of your intentions.
Meaning what?
How do I know you're not just in it for the food?
Come here, then I'll show you.
This has been Rum Runner Sue, Blood, Beer, and Ballots from the Icebox Radio Theater. Our play starred Billy Joe Cones as Sue, Trelawney Irwin as Mary, Jim Yunt was Beau, Justin Kapla played Edgar, Jeffrey Adams was Senator Rostam, and Carice Boyer played Tilly. Tonight's script was written by Jeffrey Adams. Adams also did the editing, sound effects, and partial music for this episode, created with loops from Loopmasters. Some sound effects from the Freesound Project at freesound.org. This program copyright 2025 by the Icebox Radio Theater, which is solely responsible for its content. These programs are produced through the support from our wonderful patrons and listeners. For more information on how to help the Icebox Radio Theater, visit iceboxradio.org.
My thanks to Jeffrey Adams of the Icebox Radio Theater for sending us this newest addition to the Rum Runner Sue series, mystery radio drama from up north. Now, I usually don't find it necessary to pay attention to calendar holidays on this show to bring you pieces that are strictly related to an upcoming holiday, but sometimes I find something that fits, and this one seems to fit very well between the holiday of last week and the beginning of the new year. And it comes to us from the great folks at Uncanny County, who have a real talent for being able to mash up both genre and style, and you'll see how that works out in this work called Santa's Last Stop.
You're riding alone on a moonlit but starless night. You just missed your exit, and now there's only one way back home. So sit back, open your ears, and hold on tight, because you're about to take a quick detour through Uncanny County. Upon the high roof, he arrived with a thump. He raced the chimney and down he did jump, through the flue in a flash with a grin rather dark, on this, the last Christmas on which he'd embark. See, he once was the best, a renowned Christmas thief, instead of handing out gifts in ironic relief. But they caught him to rights and they sentenced him good, in a way that at first he had misunderstood. Community service had ordered the judge, and all these years later, he'd built quite a grudge.
That judge will be first on my list. He'll regret the day he made me Santa's marionette.
See, Santa'd begun to slow down with his years, and he couldn't let Christmas fall into arrears. With the help of the courts, due to cost overruns, built an army of Santas, of which this was one. But his sentence he'd served in this weird masquerade, and starting tomorrow, his debt would be paid. The monitor worn round his ankle would go, and he'd gladly return to his old status quo. He'd steal through the night until well in the dawn, because who's going to hire an ungrateful ex-con? With the powers he had now, he'd never be foiled, and the people would pay for the years he had toiled. See, the powers they'd granted were meant to be loaned, but thanks to a loophole, by him they'd be owned. Through chimneys and keyholes, under doors and through cracks, stealing all he could carry, his post-Santa tax. Then out whence he came in, 'twould be quite a sight, not that anyone'd see him move faster than light. From rooftop to rooftop, then off to some beach, or somewhere else pleasant and quite out of reach. He'd drink the best drinks with their tiny umbrellas set of working all year for the jolliest fella. Then he'd rob every house and he'd taunt every cop, but that would come after this Santa's last stop. He grinned and his eyebrows like Nicholson's arched. On this, the last night of his long Christmas march, he sized up the homestead. The last one he'd see, as Santa at least.
I'll come back once I'm free.
He shifted his girth in his red Christmas suit and picked up his bag with a snort like a brute.
All right, let's get to this. Let's get the job done. Then I'll retrace my steps, every house, one by one, through chimneys and keyholes and under the doors, grabbing loot that will fill 32 megastores. I'll steal from the rich and the poor just alike, and...
Hello?
Came the voice of a sleepy young tyke.
Santa!
He gasped.
It really is you. I knew you would come.
The tyke practically cooed.
Timmy!
He said, after glimpsing the tag on the package he'd fumbled from out of his bag.
You know it!
Said Timmy, a nod in his head.
And Santa!
Said Timmy.
You should be in bed!
I'm sorry,
said Timmy.
But here's the thing. I just sent my letter. Couldn't give you a ring.
He rocked back and forth, clutched his hand to his chest.
And I know it's real late, but I have a request.
What is it?
Said Santa as he turned to the child, took the deepest of breaths, and pretended to smile. Timmy looked at his feet and then to the fake elf. Then timidly, sort of, asserted himself.
It's about my best toy, Jeffrey J. Unicorn. He was made by my grandma. His fur was quite worn, but I loved him with all of my heart and my soul, and this afternoon, Jeffrey J., he got stolen.
Your unicorn's missing?
No, stolen, I said. Some teenagers grabbed him and laughed as they fled. Don't know why they'd take him, he was just an old doll, but he was my bestest friend above all. And I know that you know that I've been pretty good. Did homework, use manners, did stuff that I should? It's not what I asked for in the letter I done. But maybe, just maybe, could I get a new one?
That's rough, kid. It sucks when a toy disappears. Folks have stole lots from me, too. Even years. But here's the thing, kid. You are her grandson. Just ask your grandma to make you a new one.
Timmy's chin dropped, and he tried not to cry. As he looked to the ground and said,
my grandma died.
The world was now silent but for soft fallen snow, and this Santa, for once, didn't just want to go. He felt for the boy, and his heart filled with grace, and he wished that this unicorn could be replaced.
I'm sorry,
said Santa,
but that's not what I do, and a loss like you've suffered is hard to construe. I've brought you some presents, but this is my last stop. There's nothing more in there. Not even a top.
That's okay,
offered Timmy.
It was worth a shot, but I'm sure that I'll love anything that you brought.
Timmy,
said Santa,
I wish I could help you. If I knew where they lived, I guess I could break into...
No!
Shouted Timmy.
That wouldn't be right. I'll be okay, Santa. So thank you. Good night.
Santa reached for his bag, all the presents dispersed. Well, at least that is what he believed there at first. But something remained. Something small, slightly worn. A beat-up stuffed horse with a shiny blue horn.
Well, I'll be... Timmy! Catch!
Jeffrey J. Thank you, Santa. Thank you.
Timmy reached up, snatched the toy from the air, and Santa felt richer than 10 billionaires. His heart overflowed for the sweet little lad. He'd wished he could help him, and somehow he had. And this feeling exploding inside of his chest, though quite unfamiliar, he felt it with zest. As the feeling in which he just started to delve started to overwhelm him, the clock, it struck 12. The monitor fell to the floor with a clatter, and Timmy looked at him and said,
"What's the matter?"
He dabbed at his eyes and he fell to his knees, for he'd found his true calling too late. He was free. His heart filled with grief at the joy that he'd missed, given freely with love to all folks on his list. Then a sad little laugh and the tiniest shrug as Timmy said,
"Santa, do you need a hug?"
He nodded, and the boy hugged him right round the neck. And the ex-Santa held his emotions in check. He hugged the boy back, then he patted his head and said,
"You and your unicorn head off to bed."
The boy toddled off, and the ex-Santa smiled at the boy with his toy still completely beguiled. He picked up a cookie, enjoyed one last bite, and then this ex-Santa slipped into the night.
"So what now?"
said the deputy, there by the car.
"And what do we do with the reindeer up there?"
"We'll see,"
said the sheriff.
"But first, wait a tick. I think I see something." "Well, howdy there, Nick."
"Hey, Sheriff,"
said the ex-Santa, hanging his head.
"Hang on. You all right there? You look about half dead."
"Oh, I wasted my time, and it just makes me ill. This was quite an adventure. I'll miss it, I will."
"Well, that's how it goes, but your time you done served. Though, as it's now Christmas, I could throw a curve."
"What do you mean?"
the ex-Santa said as he sized her up closely and tilted his head.
"There's a new judge in town,"
Sheriff Roland began.
"And he don't like this system. No, he ain't a fan. So your boots will stay empty. It's sad, I confess. But you're our last Santa, I tell you. Unless..."
"No Santa?"
he cried.
"No, that can't be so. So my sentence is served."
"And you are free to go."
"But Sheriff..."
"No buts, Nick. Just hear me out."
"Sheriff Roland..."
"Now, Santa, do not make me shout."
Santa, abashed, simply nodded his head as the sheriff grinned at him, winked, and then said,
"How can I put this? Not to be cavalier. Though your sentence is served, you could volunteer..."
Santa started to laugh. Ho, 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 filled the air. But it didn't matter. There was no one to stare.
"Why, I'll do it forever. I'll do it with glee. I'll do it for them, and I'll do it for me."
"Good,"
said the sheriff.
"Now you'd best be away. To the rooftop with you. Then off on your sleigh."
"I owe you,"
he shouted below.
"I tell you, we're even. Now go away. Go."
"Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas!"
The sleigh sailed away from the roof with a squeal, and the deputy said,
"So he really is real."
"Of course,"
said the sheriff.
"Now put down that cup. We're off to catch Krampus. You'd best buckle up."
So try to remember, each Christmas Eve night, no need to lock valuables up good and tight. Secure all your doors, but leave a light on for this reform Santa, the Jolly Ex-Con.
Uncanny County is the unholy creation of Todd Faulkner and Allison Crane. It's produced by Todd Faulkner, Allison Crane, William Frankie, and Nicole Grevy, and our executive producer is Jessica Walker. Tonight's episode, Santa's Last Stop, was written and produced by Todd Faulkner. It featured John Spano as Nick, Griffin Robert Faulkner as Timmy, Nicole Grevy as Sheriff Roland, and William Frankie as Deputy Dillard. From all of us at Uncanny County, have a happy holiday hullabaloo. We hope this holiday season is truly magical for you, and we hope that your dreams come true. Well, most of them. not the nightmares.
Hello, dear friends. This is Aleister Crowley, and I hope you're enjoying the all-night images. Hello, dear friends. This is Aleister Crowley, owner and operator of Duke of Madness Motors, here at the edge of the New World Freeway. And you know, there's a lot of things going on in this town of ours that none of us has really gotten out of our car to really see. You can drive north and south in any direction in just a short time to see more wonderful and truly real things than are happening when you drive by. And that's because of the wonderful automobile that you have the pleasure to buy to get there in the first place. Safe and first and unconscious of the economy. It's so quiet. We're all, just like this little auto robot here, I'm thinking, a lot shorter than we used to be. And this little guy here we're talking about can have just as many wonderful needs at home as anybody else. And to get him home, to get all of us watching home, he has to be taken out to run over the streets. And the kids, and what about the cats and the dogs? Pick them up and put them in the robot and bring them down to Duke of Madness Motors, and we'll fit them each out with a robot of their own so they can get out around and see it too. Keep watching, and you'll see we're always welcome to meeting strangers and wives and discounting everything that happens here at Duke of Madness Mufflers every day that remains from noon to noon. Thank you.
Well, he sure got that right. It's way too easy these days to discount everything that happens. That was Duke of Madness Motors from the Fire Sign Theater's album, Dear Friends. And before that, it was Santa's Last Stop. That was the last episode of Season 2 from the Uncanny County podcast. And we started it all off with a Rum Runner Sue episode, Blood, Beer, and Ballots from the Icebox Radio Theater in International Falls. If you missed the beginning of this program, or you just want to hear it again, it's available in the archives for 2 weeks after tonight's broadcast at kfai.org. Look up Sound Effects, a Radio Playground. And you do that because I'm Jerry Stearns, the host of Sound Effects, a Radio Playground. We're here every Sunday night with modern audio theater that you just aren't going to hear anywhere else. Yep, that's true. I looked it up. Another thing you can look up is what comes after us here on Sound Effects is Abby's Room for One, and it's next.
Sound Effects, a Radio Playground. Best in audio theater, comedy, and the audio arts. A medium where almost everything is left to your imagination.
Winter is here. Ramsey County winter warming spaces are open every night between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. now through March. These spaces are available to anyone in need of a place to warm up overnight. If you or someone you know need a place to warm up overnight, call 651-266-1035 between 5 p.m. and 5 a.m. That's 651-266-1035. To find out more, visit ramseycounty.us/warming spaces.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting the Twins of Franklin at the Turf Club Thursday, January 8th. Becky Shaheen and Laura Lou Duchesne aren't twins, but together, their harmonies might make you think so. Indie folk rockers, the Twins of Franklin, take the Turf Club stage with their latest release, This Life. It's indie rock that also embraces Americana, roots, and folk. Opening the show are Katie Tessman and the Turnbuckles and the Gated Community. More information about the Twins of Franklin at the Turf Club is available at first-avenue.com.
In recognition of the freedom of speech protections on the First Amendment and the FCC's relaxed policy on late night and overnight language, this KFAA program may include song lyrics that some listeners might find objectionable. Listener discretion is advised.
You can't always get
try sometimes, you get what you need.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, going out to the stratosphere, or on the web at www.kfai.org, or catch this train wreck for the next 2 weeks. It's archived. This is Abby's Room for One Radio. You're at the end of your week, or the beginning of the next one, or somewhere in the